Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Entrepreneur Circle, Eric Cabral.
On this episode,
there is a science of how we can make branding more effective, and it's actually based on our memories. And the reason System 1 and System 2 thinking is so important is because 95% of our thinking is sensory intaking. So shape, color, words, story, messaging, photography, illustration, all these things, if they're really distinct in that category, I'll remember them. So basically the brand with the most distinct and famous brand assets is the one that you remember. And then the one that you remember is the one that you buy on autopilot.
You have now entered the Entrepreneur Circle.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at Honor Your Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands.com so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to the Entrepreneur's Circle. I'm your most happy and humbled host as usual. I have an amazing fellow that we're going to be chatting and getting into all things brand and all things brand science. We're going to dive deep into not just his methodology behind branding, which you guys know. I love branding. I'm all about branding. But now we're going to talk about the scientific side of things, the data, and all the things that make things work behind the scenes, as well as his story. So first of all, I want to thank you, Stephen Fry, for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. And thank you, listeners, for joining us. Excited to be on the show.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm pumped. First off, I just want to let you guys know who don't already know, Stephen is the adorkable founder of Chief Brand Science and Chief Brand Scientist at Quantum Branding. He helps brands become authentic and memorable category leaders through the power of brand science, the core of what fuels a successful brand's growth, sales, and marketing. So I am really, really, really intrigued and excited to chat about all things and what you do. But first off, brother, I want to chat about your eureka moment in life or business.
Ooh, which one?
Yeah.
That's what
which one? The one that comes to the top.
So there's one that affects all the other ones. And there's another one that we may get to and you and I talked about before. But the biggest eureka moment was that I was actually, and that I am actually, and so it in the past, so I said it was, but I had the moment where I discovered and learned that I was neurodiverse. And
can you explain to the audience what that is? Yeah,
sure. So neurodiversity is basically a more comprehensive term that helps us understand how people are, and this isn't the best metaphor, but we say wired, because it's not like we are wired wrong and you're wired right. Most of the time, people operate this way, you know. So for most people, you have your five senses. Well, if someone is born without the ability to see, they are blind. But then there's this gray area in between where maybe the way that people are neurologically wired may be different. So ADHD, dyslexia, and there's so many different conditions that are on this. And it's not like it's a line. It's more like a spectrum of like a starburst of quadrants. So it's like, ooh, how are you with conceptual thinking? How are you with sarcasm? Ooh, I'm really low on sarcasm. So I just have to assume everything is sarcasm. You know, so one of the big things with folks who are neurodiverse is how they read, how they process the world around them. One of the things sometimes I do is when I'm in a loud, noisy place, I tend to rock. That's called stimming. Some people will hit themselves or yank on their hair. And basically what they're doing is they found a coping mechanism that works for them. Sometimes this is unhealthy, and children who are neurodiverse need to learn healthier ways to stim that aren't self-destructive. So being autistic can take many, or being neurodiverse can take many different forms. I have, you know, basically several different areas that mostly for me come down to, I have difficulty sensing sarcasm. I have difficulty processing high sensory environments. And actually had a conversation yesterday that basically was like, hey, do you remember the old days of radios? They weren't digital before that, when they would go, and you'd go back and then you're like, oh, now I hear it. Oh, I just have to fine tune it. So I listen to Stephen FM, my own radio station, but sometimes when there's so much noises and things around me, it actually makes me lose sense of my body, my senses, so I have to tune back in to Stephen FM. And there's some tools that I've learned as far as breathing, kind of body scanning, or yoga nidra is another kind of form of like, oh, what am I feeling, to get present in my body so I can basically continue on my day more tuned in, or else as an empath or a mega empath, which is what I am, I will absorb everyone else's energy. I will absorb everyone else's senses. I will absorb all the noises. So I have a little service dog, had him for several years now. His name is Onyx. His job is to be super fluffy and to check in on me when he notices I'm having sensory overload. And so I have a little card, and when I give it to people, they're like, "What is this, a service dog?" They can ask that. Yes. What is he trained to do? And I want to say be fluffy. But that would not, we should not say that. No. So I say that he's trained for daily activities in high sensory environments. So, so that was the biggest eureka moment that then afterwards was a lens that changed how I look back on my childhood, my young adulthood, my middle adulthood, all the hoods.
Yeah. All the hoods. The
neighborhood changed how I look at my neighborhood for sure.
I love it. So, how long ago did you discover
the big eureka?
That's huge. You're enlightening me, because I'm identifying with it as well as, you know, one of my kids specifically. What were some of the, so how long ago did you discover this? And then also, what were some of the early signs that you now are aware of? Like, oh, as a child, this happened. As a middle child, this happened. Like,
yeah. So I came to the conclusion, I came into understanding for myself after kind of doing a lot of research and putting the pieces together, going to my doctor, talking, having conversations. Also, the visibility, like when people talk about visibility, I don't, if you are a person who has trouble with visibility, this little bit isn't for you. But if you're someone who really gets this, like having Miles Morales be, you know, an African-American Spider-Man, that's visibility. Having one of the characters in the BK Kids Club be in a wheelchair, that's visibility. It was saying like, oh, there's people just like me. So having, you know, Hannah Gatsby, you know, I think an Emmy award winning, you know, comedian be on Netflix with a comedic special, for her to have visibility and also be, you know, Tig Notaro, several other comedians, actors, actresses, sharing or being, you know, known that they are neurodiverse and successfully navigating their adult lives. Mm-hmm. I had a lady that I met several years ago with an agency kind of mastermind group. And she came up to me and she said, "Oh my gosh, seeing you, you're running your own agency, seeing you here with Onyx, seeing how much you guys love each other. It gives me so much hope. I have two twin boys and one of them is neurodiverse. And it's been very difficult because I worry so much about him." I went to another function and someone said the same thing. And he goes, "My daughter is neurodiverse and I've been kind of being passive as a father, not knowing what to do. And now I'm like, the second I go home, I know that I'm going to go get her a service animal that's trained to help her in high sensory environments and some of the things that you shared that I know that she also has. And I'm like, I'm going to look into that because I know." So for me, it was visibility and seeing that and putting pieces together. When I look at back growing up, you know, I was always collecting things. Like, just because you collect things doesn't mean you're neurodiverse. If that was true, Nick Cannon would be neurodiverse because I think he collects babies. Or maybe it's girlfriends, mommies, baby mommies.
Yeah,
but,
baby mamas.
That was my best attempt at a joke right there. But collecting things, coins, stamps. My dad is a well driller and a geologist, and he's a master driller. And so he'd always bring home rocks. And so I like would collect these rocks. And then I would igneous and sedimentary. And I would learn the different things. And then as I got older, this continued. I saw a plant I liked, and it's a nematanthus plant. Nematanthus plant. It looks like a goldfish cracker is growing on a vine of green. It's amazing. It's orange. Orange is my favorite color. So I look into the nematanthus plant. I find out what it is. Ooh, there's nematanthus gregarious, and there's nematanthus wetsteini, and there's all these. And then I literally found a page that showed all the genus species of this. And I would like, it was like porn. I was like, "Ooh, that one is a variegated flower. Oh, ooh, this one has a yellow flower and little, you know, purple calyces and stripes." And it's like, he's neurodiverse. Like, come on. Like, if that wasn't the sign, you know.
Yeah.
Now, I was also drawing unicorns and played with My Little Ponies. Now, if that could have been a sign, it should have been a sign, would have been a sign for something else that was. But that wasn't the big eureka moment. The eureka moment was as an adult, discovering that. So it helps me looking back that explains some of my behaviors as a kid, like why I don't like high sensory environments where all the kids are playing and partying and doing things. And I don't want to go to the skate rink. But so then I'm like, oh, am I an introvert? Am I an ambivert? And so that's none of that stuff's really scientific anyways. It's learning about who you are and what's the best place for you to interact and operate with. And for me, I ultimately learned, wow, there was a reason I would go do the things I did and then like retreat into this creative hole and then come out and present my work and share my work. And then I would go experience the world. And so curiosity and wonder are kind of my two leading superpowers. And so then I would go make sense of the world around me and then go create. And so that's still very true to what I do today.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. It hasn't been a topic that I've looked into or heard much of, so now I'm going to start researching. So thanks for the edification, and it's making me think of my oldest, and I think she definitely falls in line with all of the things that you shared, which is fascinating. So let's get into some of the things that you're doing, because I'm thinking that what's unique about what you do and what I've learned so far is that it's a very left and right brain operation where you're combining science, which to me is, you know, data, you know, metrics, all the things that I'm not a big fan of as a creative, very left brain and analytical, versus sort of the right brain stuff, which is all creative and abstract and, to me, fun. I mean, exciting, but could stress a left brain type of person out. So how did you realize that you are merging the two things, or that you're somewhere in the center, or how did you navigate and which is your strength?
Sure. So what if I told you there was no thing as left brain, right brain?
Yeah,
and what
please.
If that's a box that we use to just describe things that makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
It helps us make sense of the world. But what if we could make better sense of the world around us by understanding how we think more clearly? So one of the people that I follow their work is the work of Daniel Kahneman. He's a Nobel Prize winning psychologist. And he basically says there's two ways that our brain works is a better way to say it. It's almost like mm-hmm. there's two engines and we activate these engines. But interestingly enough, 95% of the time we're in what he calls system one thinking. And system one thinking is rapid. It's autopilot. It is absorbing from the world around you. It's making sense. It's interpreting, and it's helping you understand and keep you going. It's very much, some people like to call this the lizard brain. That's not actually true. I don't know why mm-hmm. you call this. but the system one is 1 + 1 = 1. It's driving while you're talking on the cell phone, while you're listening to the radio. It can handle multiple things. System two is like, hey, Eric, would you like to buy this piece of property for a down payment of 39% and it's 6.25% and it's going to be $450,000? And you're just like, what? Or 15 times 37. I don't know. It's the calculatory, like, ooh, let me check my bank. Let me check my repository of values. Let me check my self. So system two thinking is comprised about 5% of the time. So everything else we do predominantly is active and reactionary to the world around us. So why does this matter? Why is Steven bringing it up? What are you talking about this? So how I got onto this path was I started reading a book. I don't know if you ever came across Alina Wheeler's Designing Brand Identity. Do you remember that book?
No.
And it's like fifth edition. It's one of my favorite books of all time. And basically, it's a great book if you're interested about the process of branding. A little bit of what it was, a little bit of what the process is. I got done reading that and I bought every single edition of that book every year as they came out.
Oh, wow.
But when I was in the first edition of that book, I was like, but Alina, why? Why are we doing this? What, like, how does this work? So it led me to a path to be like, you know what? I really want to understand how branding works. And no one is telling me. It's bothering the snot out of me. So then I started down this path of saying like, ooh, wait, let's understand like, oh, marketing helps facilitate trade. You don't make cars. I don't make cell phones. I need to know who to buy from. So that's where ads and marketing. So it says, hey, do business with me. And then branding is the unique stuff that you remember within the marketing that says, hey, do business with me. So you remember to do business with them. You're like, oh yeah, Toyota. I see ads. I like the top. So that brings top of mindness. So like, ooh, there's something in it's about memories. So started me down the path of finding out, wait, there is a science of how we can make branding more effective. And it's actually based on our memories. And the reason system one and system two thinking is so important is because 95% of our thinking is sensory intaking. So shape, color, words, story, messaging, photography, illustration, all these things, if they're really distinct in that category, I'll remember them. So basically the brand with the most distinct and famous brand assets is the one that you remember. Yes. And then the one that you remember is the one that you buy on autopilot.
Yeah.
So it led me down this path to discover like, wait a second, there's a science to how we think. And then this is kind of fitting in with thinking and with the, you know, system one and system two and memory structures and neuroplasticity. Then I got my mind blown recently, and this is another conversation, to discover that manifesting is actually scientific and it's based on neuroplasticity as well. So like, it's basically creating top of mindness of what you're looking for yourself. So the science of the mind is so incredibly powerful and integral. And it basically gives us a path to say the brand with the most mental availability and the most physical availability, think about it, but then it's got to be available for you to buy. It's got to be easy to buy. It came up with a little phrase, nag. Notice, attract, get, that you have to nag people. But even more important, the other phrase I was actually going to say, my mind went to a different place, was unseen is unsold. So if people don't know about you, haven't heard about you, they can't buy you, they can't work with you, they can't talk with you, they can't donate to your organization, they can't buy cupcakes or cookies from your daughter. Like, unseen or unheard or is unsold. Mm-hmm. So really it has to do with people's cognition, their memories, and thinking of you first. And so that was the path, was Alina's book, and then getting mad at her, lovingly throwing it against the wall and being like, why? And that led me down my path to start my agency and do the work that I do.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. There was so much to unpack there that I'm fascinated by. Well, number one, what was the name of Alina's book again?
It's called Designing Brand Identity.
Okay. And she has several books.
Has several editions. I think it's in the 5th edition right now. We're trying to get Brand Science in the 6th edition. You and me, Eric, we're gonna do some Be Your Brand work and quantum branding work, and we're gonna maybe add some case studies in there. I don't know.
Yeah, I love it. Because here's, and I like you alluding to that only because I still operate because it feels safe. But I'm sure more conversations with you will allow me to expand my belief system here. I don't like the system two. Like, that is just very foreign to me. So therefore I surround people who are really good at that stuff around me to help me operate the business.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. If you're not good with, you know, keeping track of your money, there's apps that can help you. But if that's not good enough, then you get, you know, an accountant or a financial planner. This doesn't absolve the need for maturity in adulthood. So it just really is, how do we process making decisions, and us understanding the majority of the thinking and the decisions we make are more system one. They are more filtered through your sensory perceptions. And that's even, you know, another part of that is narratives. Like, what are the stories we're telling ourselves? So that even gets us stuck in the self-help world a little bit. You know, and then our reality and our perception of reality, there's like a lot in here, and not trying to unpack any of it, just to say, like, there's a lot in system one. And it's okay. It's okay. If you're not good with money, or you don't want to take out the trash or scoop poop, or, you know, work on doing a mortgage, that's okay. You know, delegate skills you don't want or don't have, that, you know, I hope that everyone listening to this is operating in a place or working towards where they are doing what they love 60 to 80% of the time, most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, there's still going to be 20 to 30 to 40% of yuck. Like, that's life. Like,
right. You know,
but most of the time.
Yes, most of the time. The biggest challenge, and we don't have to go down this road since I want to move to our next segment shortly, but the biggest challenge, and I'm sure you face this because we have very similar clientele, in that putting themselves out there, whether it's their brand, it's their personal brand, whatever it is, feels like they're being very vulnerable. But then not only that, a lot of people care a little too much about what other people think. And then it hampers them, you know, to create and just be themselves. But then the main thing that I'm driving at is they don't have clarity. Like, they don't have self-awareness. There's like all these things that they're not aware. So you're going to put your brand out there, but do you know who you are? Like, what are you talking about? You know, like, how come you're talking about so many different things?
And I've got a really good example I actually want to share here that we were talking to. So for anyone who, we talked about being neurodiverse and not being neurotypical. If you are in your gender identity or orientation identity or your expression identity are diverse in the LGBTIQ, A plus, I can't remember all the letters. I think that's all of them right now. But if you identify as distinct, not same, but distinct, if you are, there's a process that I went through where I discovered very late in life when I was 28 that I came out to myself. And I had to have this realization of who I was. And I was still waiting to get married, you know, to have sexy time. Like I was like still very entrenched in some church traditionalistic beliefs. And so here I was dealing with, you know, and I'll throw this out in the conversation, virginity and homosexuality in a conversation like, oh, well, I haven't broken the rules. Why are you now why is this so upsetting to you? Church people in my, you know, self mostly. And I was like, what am I going to believe true about myself? So I went through a process where I had to be rooted and grounded. I'm like, I get to say who I am. I get to say who I am and what I stand for. And I still stand for everything. I actually am like a beautiful botanical Nematanthus orangerarius. I don't know. I'm a new, like, all it did was give me, oh, here's a facet of this. Here's this beautiful gem, but now we understand just another facet of it. And it wasn't what made me me. It was part of me, but it wasn't the only thing. So then it actually gave me some clarity looking back, like, oh, this explains why some situations unfolded the way they did. And I was completely oblivious to them. So here's where the connection is. I have to be rooted and grounded in myself before I can go build a brand, before I can go, hey, mom and dad, can I have a difficult conversation with you about something that may upset you? Be sensitive. So I have to be rooted in the challenge that I see with many people who are exiting corporate America, who are coaches and consultants, people who are starting to go out on their own. They want to achieve something. They want to build something. They want to find value in something. And the feedback loop is backwards. The feedback loop is like, here's their heart with all their magic goodness shining out. But here's actually, whoop, it's turned in. And it's like, Eric, how can I be helpful to you? And so then I take your needs and I fawn my own. And this is not true for everybody. But, you know, there's fight, flight, fawn, freeze. There's another F word that some people say is the fifth F in there. At the end of the day, when we're triangulating who we are based on how other people interact with us, that's a bad place to start to go build a brand. So like literally on my vision traction organizer, one of my values is kittens. Like it's funny, but it's not funny. Like I run a rescue. I have five kittens that I've rescued in the past 2 years. And because of the veterinary system having so many, they're all stuck with me because they all bonded and it took 6 months to get them spayed and neutered. But I am involved with local spay neuter, trap neuter and release. And so like, that's a value. Like, I'm not going to like argue about that with people. So I use that really trivial one to share. Like, when I go out in the world and it's like, 10% of everything I do goes to support local, national, and international, blah, blah, blah. And you see kittens on there, like, if you don't like it, don't donate. Don't work with me. Like, is that really, that's really what you're upset about? You're really, you know, Steven loves the color orange. You're upset about that?
Yeah.
So if that's easier to do, and you're like, oh, no, Eric, I don't have to donate. I don't have to donate, you know, 10% of your project. I don't have to do that. What?
Yeah.
So I use that silly example to say, when you are rooted, when you are grounded and rooted in who you are, what you stand for, and who is not for you, who is not for you.
Yeah.
I've worked with billion-dollar organizations, and you know what? They're just as smart or just as not as smart as some of the smaller organizations. So I'd actually rather work with people who are passionately connected to the mission that they're doing on this planet with their company.
100%.
And then, there is a threshold to work with me and how much that may or may not cost. But that's not the first qualifier is money. The first one is is passion and connectedness. So I go and I say, who is for me, who is not for me? And it's sometimes it's easier to triangulate and figure out who you are when you say, who is not for me? So that's so I kind of took that little olive branch or that little breadcrumb, and I was like, I see, maybe, and I just went for it. I went
well.
Maybe
well
it was
done.
The gay
well
card, done. And I pulled the gay card. Like, you are gay today.
It wasn't the crowbarred in.
Yes, queen.
It was not.
There's a new tarot deck out there I'm going to make. It's going to be called Yes Queen, and it's going to have. It's, anyways, I don't know. That's funny to two listeners out there.
Somebody will get it. Somebody will get it, and they'll reach out.
And the two listeners are just Stephen and Eric. I don't know.
and my mom. My mom listens to the show.
Thanks, Mom.
I know we're pressed for time here, but I would love for you to share the last two things here. And the first being, and you mentioned and alluded to, and I'd like to know what the fifth F word is. But in this case, the F word in embracing the F word is failure. So you've mentioned a couple things here. But if there's any other instances where you can share with the audience where you embrace failure and lessons learned through that.
So I've got my one F word would be bankruptcy. And I had made the mistake of kind of connecting my business at early on to myself and not really keeping them separate. And as a result, I got stuck with some client expenses to the tune of about 80 grand. And I had made them a shit ton of money, you know, 90 million at market launch in 5 days. You know, I think the project cost for that product launch, I think, you know, was maybe like 70 grand is all we did. So it's like I put myself in the middle of the client's expenses, which I should not have. And then I used my own personal card. And then things went sour, as things can do, not often do, but sometimes they do. And by that being connected to me personally, I ended up having just to decide my options. And honestly, I was drowning. I was drowning trying to pay everything else. I live in Nashville. And so what I bought my house for in 2007 is not what it's worth now. And so basically I was, you know, work poor and house rich, and I decided to pull the bankruptcy trigger. And so smartest thing I ever did, it stopped the bleeding. It, you know, now I didn't have creditors calling me and like many people do, but what it did is it, the inflation and the interest and all, whatever this thing, things are, if that's something that you research and that will help stop the bleeding for you. If that is a respectable, plausible, tangible process to go through. I chose to go through chapter 13 where I pay it all off and then I have my integrity and it stops the bleeding. It's funny. Our parents don't talk to us about sex or money. And then we get older and we find out they have like a lot of it. It's really weird. It's really weird.
That's good.
So, but when it comes about money, we make this thing that like money equals worth. And it's like, I would love if people took away from this, like you, who you are is you. And there's this stuff that orbits you. Maybe a business you started up and it didn't go the right direction that you wanted to. Maybe it wasn't supposed to, like, but these things orbit you. And sometimes that shit is like Elon Musk satellite trash. And you just need to get rid of some of that stuff that's in orbit. You need to get rid of the space junk that is orbiting you. And sometimes you may need to make some hard choices, but they will be good. They will be good for you in the long term because you're not making decisions based on your emotions. You're baking. If you're baking too, that's great. You should bake. if you're making decisions based on your goals long term, then the emotions are going to catch up with you. So our F word for this segment is bankruptcy.
Gotcha. Thank you for sharing that. I think that is a huge lesson. And giving permission and letting others know that that's a big failure in the eyes of many, many people who never owned a business or don't understand some of the risks or a lot of the risks that it takes. It's actually very common. If you go look at the many billionaires and millionaires, they filed for bankruptcy not once, but many times. It is a strategy that is implemented. So thank you for sharing that. No one really talks about that.
Because everyone's talking. Hopefully you do too. And if you do need to do it now, powerful. You know that there's someone else who's done it and made it. You're okay. I made it through it.
100%, brother. So as we wind down, this is the last question before we part. The one word that you use that helps people.
You're asking a neurodiverse person to use one word.
You could use one word with a pregnant pause and then explain it with a paragraph.
Yeah. I'm gonna take a cop out. It's gonna sound like a cop out on here, but I'm gonna say quantum.
Okay.
And the reason I say quantum is because the quantum theory of energy says you're defined by the energy you give off, the energy you have. Change can't occur unless it's from outside or within. And it's a great metaphor for branding, but also just the energy of who you are. You know, I talk about a lot about the science of branding. I've started shifting into the heart of branding and making sure that people understand there's a connection between the two. And so when I say quantum, I can describe to you energy and science, and, you know, I could share a story and say like, oh, the cortisol and the stress in the story, and then the resolve, oxytocin. But when you experience that, when you experience in a story, or when you experience something that genuinely connects with you, you know, so I feel like it's my karmic purpose. It's one of the reasons I'm put on this planet, is to help people share who they are, what they do, and why they matter. And so I'm proud of my little geeky younger self for latching onto that word at such an early age, and starting my agency in 2004 with that. So quantum is our word.
That's great, man. Thank you for sharing that and expanding on it. I'm sure we can dive very deep into just that concept alone. But thank you. That's great, man. There's a lot of things that we align in and with. So I'm happy to continue the conversation beyond this show and other shows. So thanks for being here. What's the best way people can reach out to you?
Yeah. So you can check out quantumbranding.agency. And on there, you can find out several things. You can find out about how to work together. You can also find out about our program, Brandpreneur. That's a 10-week intensive plus 4-day workshop that helps purpose-driven brand leaders create an action-based plan for their organization using brand science. Or you can just shoot me an email, Steven, S-T-A-E-V-E-N, at quantumbranding.agency. So happy to answer any of the questions about any of the things we've talked about and more, and help explore that with you.
Awesome, brother. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing, and thanks for being here with me.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K. At onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.